Thank you for joining us on the Accomplish Radio Show. We're celebrating over 100 shows and over 20,000 listeners that have been searching for answers on how to accomplish more in their personal and professional life. Today's broadcast will replay all day at AccomplishMagazine.com, and it's also available in the iTunes community. When you visit our website, sign up for your free subscription of Accomplish Magazine and make sure to join our fan page on Facebook. Welcome to the Accomplish Radio Show. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, interviewing another phenomenal guest today. And our special guest is Mike Michalowicz. He's the author of The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur from New Jersey. And Mike has a driving passion for entrepreneurialism. It is his belief that anyone who has the desire, even a fleeting what if, has been touched by an inspiration that must be satisfied. Mike wrote The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur with the sole purpose of giving first-time entrepreneurs the information they need to grow their concepts into industry leaders. He has successfully launched 3 multi-million dollar companies. He was the founder and president of Olmec Systems Incorporated, a regional computer network integrator, which he sold in 2002 through a private transaction. He subsequently co-founded and served as managing partner of P.G. Lewis & Associates, LLC, a national provider of data forensic services, which he went on to sell to a Fortune 500 company in 2006. His most recent venture, Obsidian Launch, LLC, partners exclusively with first-time entrepreneurs to launch their ideas into niche industry leaders. Mike was the most frequent reoccurring guest on the CNBC's The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch and has had multiple appearances on Fox and ABC. He is also a reoccurring guest on MSNBC's Your Business. He has been highlighted on entrepreneurial topics on National Public Radio. He's been in Inc. magazine, The New York Times, and Smart CEO magazine. And Mike was recognized as a Young Entrepreneur of the Year in 1999 by the MCCC, New Jersey's Young Entrepreneur of the Year by the SBA in 2000, and is a 2004 graduate of MIT's Birthing of Giants Entrepreneurial Program. Additionally, he has been published internationally in magazines such as WA Business News of Australia and Sprout of the Netherlands. He's a keynote lecturer for corporate events such as eBay's National On Location Series and for entrepreneurial groups at the CEO Conference, Entrepreneur Exposé, and other national events. Michalowicz is also a regular guest at Babson, Boston College, Harvard, NYU, Penn State, TCNJ, UPenn, and many other colleges throughout the U.S. Mike is a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization and is an active member of Gathering of Titans Entrepreneurial Program. He has a BA from Virginia Tech in Finance and a second BA from Virginia Tech in Management Sciences. Well, let me give a warm welcome to our show today, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on there. And with a bio that long, I think we're done with the show. It's over.
What more can we say? Well, I have to tell you. First of all, congratulations. I mean, those are huge accomplishments.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really feel so blessed and privileged to do some of the stuff that I'm doing nowadays. Because, you know, it falls into my field of passion. I love entrepreneurship. And it's really cool to get all TV exposure. And I'm actually now writing for the Wall Street Journal and stuff, all because of this passion.
Wow. You know, before we really jump into everything and get started, I'm curious, when did you realize you were an entrepreneur?
You know, it's funny. For me, the entrepreneurial moment came out of a drunken stupor. I never planned on being an entrepreneur. I didn't, like, when I was a teenager or a younger child, I didn't, like, do entrepreneurial things, really. I never aspired to be it. The only thing I aspired to be was a corporate person, because that's what my father was. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought was what it's all about. But I became disenchanted with the first company I worked for because there were so many things I could have done that they weren't doing. So what I decided to do one night after drinking way too many beers, mm-hmm. I said, geez, I'm smarter than this guy. I know more than he does. I got to start my own business. So I started my own business the next day. and never really considered myself an entrepreneur, never really aspired for that, just thought there's better ways to do it. And within a few months or years, I was like, oh, my God, I just love having my own business. And I kind of fell into it, but that's when I discovered that I loved it.
That's great. You know, so I want to just jump right in and just, you know, ask you, so what is the toilet paper entrepreneur? Why do you use that term?
I use it because I think entrepreneurship is not what we read about. You know, I think we read about all the successes and all the wonderful things that can come out of entrepreneurship, but we don't talk about the dirty side. So, you know, we look at the cover of Fortune magazine or something, and you see whoever the famous wealthy person is of the day on there. Mark Zuckerberg's getting a lot of attention with that movie that came out, Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to point out is that it's not real, in that the fact is that that's not the common way. Most people don't start businesses at age 18, drop out of Harvard, and then are billionaires within 2 years. Most people follow a much dirtier, kind of excruciating path, but if they are willing to sustain, they'll make it through. So I said, you know, what's the way I can get this point across to people? I said, you know, what's the one common human experience that no one talks about? And I was like, ah, the bathroom. We all, you know, everyone's been stuck there with 3 sheets of paper, but we all navigate it. We root through the garbage can or something to find stuff to navigate that situation. And I'm like, that's what entrepreneurship's really like. You don't have all the resources you need. There's times you're struggling and you think you're the only person in the world ever to go through this. But it's not true. And then the moral of the story, though, is if you're willing and interested in sticking it out, if you're willing to be innovative and think ways out of the box to do things, and if you're willing to sustain, it will pay off. It will make a successful business. And you may never get on the cover of Forbes magazine or have a movie made about you, but you may be wildly successful if you just stick it out and understand there's this dirty side to business in regards to not dirty and bad, just that stuff that people don't talk about that you have to be able to live through.
There's quite a bit that entrepreneurs endure. And, you know, I know you mentioned the mindset of a toilet paper entrepreneur and, you know, what that's like. Can you explain a little bit more about what that would be like?
Yeah, well, I think there's quite a few things going on. Excuse me. But the biggest part of an entrepreneur is they have to recognize that entrepreneurship is different than being a freelancer. And I think a lot of people confuse that, meaning a lot of people think that because they have their own business and they work for themselves, they are an entrepreneur. I argue that is not true. A freelancer has his or her own responsibilities to him or his or himself, and that person makes money for themselves, but they're really just a glorified employee. A freelancer goes from job to job and, you know, hopefully makes a nice income. But an entrepreneur is a person that puts the systems behind it, someone who scales it, makes it replicatable. So an entrepreneur goes into a job saying, how do I make this as a system so I can bring in 10 or 50 or 1,000 people to do this and replicate it over and over consistently? You know, McDonald's was built by an entrepreneur. Ray Kroc went in there and made it into a system. Now anyone can go in and make a very consistent hamburger and french fries at the place. But conversely, Ray Kroc could have chosen to be a freelancer, which is a very good hamburger cooker and a very good french fry fryer. But it wouldn't be scalable. So the big thing, the big mindset shift you need to make is entrepreneurship is all about making the systems, building the platforms, putting the methods in place where other people can come in now and replicate it absolutely consistently.
That's a great point, and you're right. I mean, a lot of people can be, you know, freelance, or they could be a graphic artist or, you know, things to that nature, but you're right. And I'm always asked, how is it that I manage, you know, 3 corporations, and I'm very systematized. I know how to organize. I know how to delegate and oversee and manage. So, you know, my goal is to ultimately have someone else take it over. You know, it's not really for me to continue. And, you know, that's one of those things that I think entrepreneurs really do have to get their minds, you know, completely wrapped around that concept that, you know, if they were gone tomorrow, would their business still continue?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's funny because that's a great point. That is the ultimate test of a successful entrepreneur. I call it the 2-month vacation. If I say even suggest 2 months of vacation, continuous vacation to a lot of people that can call themselves entrepreneurs, they nearly have a heart attack. They say, I can't be away from my business more than 3-4 days. You are not a true entrepreneur yet. You may have entrepreneurial dreams, but you are still the freelancer. You still have a job. An entrepreneur that's very, you know, that is consistently installing the systems will have the confidence that when they leave for 2 months, the business can continue. Mm-hmm. And the true test of it is when they return that the business has sustained or even grown. If that has happened, you've achieved what's true entrepreneurship, the ultimate in systemization.
That's fantastic. You know, why do you think most people, you know, avoid launching a business to begin with? I mean, what do you think is holding them up?
Well, I think the associated risk with it. Like, are you crazy starting a business? It may not work. You may fail. You may fall on your face. And look at the, you know, the dire consequences. You could lose all your money. So it's fraught in fear. The funny thing is, if you are willing to take that leap off the cliff, that fear that prevented you from taking that first step is ultimately the fear that drives you to make it successful. So when you start a business, if you have that fear, like, I got to make this work, I'm so afraid of failure, it's what initially keeps you going. I mean, you can amazingly pull off 24-hour days when you're scared, like, you're not going to make your mortgage payment. So the irony is many people are afraid to start entrepreneurship because of many reasons, but don't recognize that if they simply go for it and use that fear, it can push them along initially. Now, the long thing is, the long-term component, though, is if you stay based in fear, well, that ultimately can kill you. I mean, it brings about stress and constant anxiety. So fear is an important component in the beginning. You need to build these systems so you get into what I call the confidence stage, where you feel confident and comfortable that your business now can sustain and grow. Ultimately, most successful entrepreneurs go from confidence actually to aspiration. They're trying to make a difference in the world. That they're confident their business is going to sustain, but they have a higher purpose, if you will, to bring significant positive change and impact to the kind of business world around them.
Hmm.
So kind of the summary is, many people get to the edge of the cliff and say, it's too scary, I'm going to lose out, you know, I'm going to lose everything. And you know what? The thing is, that is a potential. It's a potential reality. The only thing is, if you don't do it, I guarantee you'll never be successful. You'll never have satisfied that. And if you do try and do fail, at least you now know in your inside you have the confidence to try something. And failure is ultimately simply, failure doesn't mean anything if you learn from it. Failure simply means a way not to do it, and you can find a new way. Failure only becomes significant if you give up and say, okay, I failed, I can never do it. Failure just means change, try a new route, try it again. Just be relentless. That's what how it pays off.
That's perfect. You know, I want to touch on something here because I think part of the reason why people resist launching a business is that they feel like they have to have a whole bunch of working capital. And I know you talk a lot in your book, and I apologize, I don't have your book in front of me to reference, but from what I've read, you know, online and some other places, you talk about the whole, you know, angel investors or financing and how people just sort of hesitate because they're waiting for enough money to actually launch their business. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I call it bankers are anchors is my little saying. And the reason is when we try to raise money through banks, and this is, can be true for angel investors, and I'll talk about that in a second, but banks have specific criteria of how to lend money. They need a high degree of assurity that the money is going to be paid back because they owe this money to the people that lend it to them, which is ultimately the customers of the bank. So banks have criteria purely safety-driven. And how they measure a business's potential success is, well, is someone else doing this successfully? Is there does this new company coming in, do they have a formula that's been proven out in the past by other companies? Because then I can measure its potential for success. The funny thing about entrepreneurship is all about innovation. It's bringing about systems innovatively and doing new things that people want. So inherent to entrepreneurship is doing what banks see as risky, doing something brand new that doesn't have a proven track record. It's brand new to the market. So what's best for you as an entrepreneur, changing the market, serving clients in a new, better way, ironically is the most risky as perceived by the banks. But I know a lot of entrepreneurs that say, well, if the bank doesn't think it's going to be successful, how can it be successful? So I have to do what the bank wants. And they get kind of cornered into doing the stuff that's worked in the past. Ironically, if it's worked in the past, that means it's been mastered by someone else, likely. And the only way you're going to make a dent in that market is to make a major innovation or improvement upon it. And that's why bankers are anchors. If you answer to what the banker needs, and I understand why they need that, but if you answer to that, ultimately you may not be answering to what the entrepreneur needs to deliver.
Hmm.
Now, when it comes to angel investors, venture capital, same thing. They're looking for quick returns. I mean, these are investors. They're not, you know, philanthropists. They're not giving away money. So these angel investors and VCs are looking to make money. And what they do is they look, Do they have more than just money, but do they have a complement they bring to the table? Do they have contacts or other businesses they've already invested in that can use your business to get off the ground quickly? Because they want their money back fast. So again, people go to angels and they can't raise angel money. They're like, I have to change my business. No, the angel, you're just not a match for the angel. So when it comes to banks, angel investors, they are good in the appropriate situation. But it seems that many entrepreneurs, they think you have to start there. And I say, no, start on your own dime. Really put your own skin into it and get some momentum. Then you'll find as your business is growing that you've had to use innovative ways because you haven't had money. You have to do some crazy out-of-the-box things. But you will get started because you don't have money. You're thinking innovatively. And ironically, as your business starts growing, now you have a proof that your innovations work. You can go back to those banks, back to the VCs, back to the angels, and they'll invest in you. So that's kind of how it works.
That's a good point. I like the way that you mentioned, you know, instead of waiting for the funding before you launch, go ahead and start the business, get it off the ground, do your tweaking and all your other fun things, then go back and approach those folks. That makes a lot more sense instead of trying to get the money up front, which I think everybody always tries to do. You know, I've been celebrating close to 9 years in business, and I have yet to go and get a business loan. And not saying I wouldn't mind, because,
nice.
You know.
Nice. And, you know, a business like yours, once a business has a track record, money actually can come to you. Because people start hearing about this. You know, what's Darlene doing? But, you know, 9 years in business, she's got some good momentum, and money might start presenting itself toward you. You're in a much better position to negotiate when you have a successful track record under your belt.
Yeah, you know, I'm open. So any of our listeners that are looking at funding some projects, I'm here. No, just kidding. No, you know, there's some things that you mentioned that, you know, there's a part of your book actually talks about how the lack of money can actually give you an advantage over your competitors. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, that points back to innovation. Hmm. So when we don't have money, we are forced to think out of the box. So, and we've all heard it, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, you know, if you start a business, you have no money, you're going to still need advertising. You're still going to need professional support. So now, you can think of new ways of accomplishing this without money. So I'll give you a couple of ways that I've come up with that served me very well when I've been starting out my business. You know, the obvious one is I start a new business, well, now I have no money, I got to start out of my house. I can't have any money to pay rent. So what I do is I look at areas of my house to work, or I send an email out to all my friends and say, hey, I'm looking to start a new business. I don't have any funding currently. If anyone has space that's unoccupied while I'm not in a position to pay rent, I clean my office anyway. I'll gladly clean the remainder of the office every day when I'm leaving. And I got free office space that way just by reaching out to people and thinking innovatively, like, what can I offer to people of value if it's not money? I got free furniture that way. I sent an email to about 30 people I knew saying, hey, I'm moving to a new space. I have no furniture. If you have anything you're discarding, give me a heads up. And sure enough, two people were in the process of moving, getting rid of furniture, and they were actually appreciative. I was taking away their old stuff, which for me was brand new and pretty darn good stuff. advertising. Excuse me, I have a cold. I'm all congested. But advertising is another way. If I had to run advertisements, I said, I have no money, but I need to get the word out. I need my phone ringing right now. What do I do? And I came across this idea of, I looked at all my competition in my market and said, well, they have ads in the Yellow Pages or on their website. They have their, you know, website listings with their contact information, the service they provide, and their phone number. They have signs on the outside of the building with their phone number. And so what I started doing was calling all these phone numbers. And sure enough, especially in these economic times, a lot of businesses had gone out of business. So their phone number was disconnected, but they still had the advertising. They're still in the Yellow Pages. Their website listings were still there. All the directories, their websites in some cases were still up there. Their signs were still up. So I knew customers were calling these numbers, getting a disconnected number. So I called the local phone company and said, can you redirect that phone number to me?
You did not.
For $5? Yeah. For $5, we'll redirect it. It's a disconnected number. So all of a sudden,
brilliant.
Phone numbers. For $5, my phone within seconds starts ringing. And so I pick it up and I'm like, hey, and they're like, they're calling for this other company. I said, you know, unfortunately, that business has gone out of business. We have taken over the phone number for them because we provide the exact same service. So while they're not available, we'll gladly service your account. And sure enough, pick up client after client after client. $5.
Wow.
And if take that one, anyone listening right now, you too, darling, anyone that has a competition out there, get their numbers redirected to you. But the key here is when you have no, if I had money, I wouldn't have put that much thought into it. I would just buy the space. I'd put the sign up, all that stuff. When I don't have money, I start thinking innovatively. The whole trick to it, though, the whole trick that everyone listening needs to do is you have to ask better questions. Because if you sit there and you have no money and say, why do it? Why me? Why am I struggling? Your mind will always think of answers. That's its job. And all of a sudden in the shower, it'll say, well, because you weren't raised right, or because you weren't silver spooned, or because you don't have access to education. Conversely, if you ask good questions like, how do I advertise when I have no money? You ask that in your mind. Subconsciously, your mind keeps cranking away of it. And then you have that shower moment where all of a sudden it's like, bam, I just thought of it. So the key is when you have no money, recognize it's to your advantage. It makes you think innovatively. But start asking in your mind, enabling better questions. And just let your mind go to work and just wait. Because if you keep asking that question, one day in the shower or at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's going to pop in your mind, and then you got to run with it.
That's awesome. You know, I'm assuming, Mike, that a lot of these ideas and concepts and strategies are all covered in the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur book, correct?
That is darn right. Yeah, so we're just scratching the surface of what we're talking about now, but the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, thanks for mentioning it, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and so forth. I really dig into this, and I talk about little mindset changes you can make to have a dramatic input in your business. One of the arguments I make in the book is that most people, I think, are 1 or 2 degrees off of having an excellent business. But the best analogy, I heard it recently, if you fly from Los Angeles to New York and the plane's off by 1 degree, it actually ends up in Nova Scotia, ends up in way up north. Because the more you progress off by 1 degree, it just keeps going further north, further north, further north. So if you've been operating a business and you're only 1 or 2 degrees off, but you've been doing it for years, your business is far from being in the right direction. You just need to make these adjustments, push forward, and you'll get right back on course and get where you want to go.
That's great advice. I hope that our listeners go out and grab the book and, of course, visit your website, which is, what, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com?
Yep, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. If you don't know how to spell that because it's a long one, just give it your best stab in Google and they'll find it.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, I wanted to mention or actually ask you because I know that you actually said, making a business plan is sort of a waste of time. Can you tell me why?
Yeah. This is something we've all been, quote, unquote, trained or taught to do. And the idea of a business plan, in general, is to support loan objectives. But I found that I've never found an entrepreneur, myself included, that has adhered to their business plan. The reason business plans don't work is you have to put these projections in there. One of the standard elements of a business plan is what's your projected revenue for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. But the fact is, if you can project the revenue for one day for a business that doesn't exist, you can probably predict the stock market. And you can literally become a billionaire in a matter of a year if you know how to predict the stock market. So if you think you can predict a business where it's going to go, you're deadly wrong. I've never found someone that wrote a business plan and was able to predict where their business would go. Inevitably, you're writing in the dream team, the people that are there to support you, the people that have all these great contacts and stuff. But the truth of the matter is when the business gets running, they have to cover their own ass too. Those people are working on their own progress. Mm-hmm. It's unlikely a dream team's going to come around. The only part of the dream team is you. So there's a lot of these artificial elements that we are told to put into a business plan that never come into play. So I believe there's a much better alternative, and it's basically a couple very simple components. First thing is put the X on the map of where you want to end up, your destination. I usually put 10 years out. What's the picture of my business? What's it feel like? Where is it located? What's the type of clients I'm servicing? In general, what am I doing for them? And that's basically saying, I'm in Los Angeles now. I want to go to New York. Then the guidance is in what I call attacking, TACKING, attacking strategy. And that's an old sailing term. Now, sailors, when they sail from one point to another, they go in a zigzag pattern because they have to adjust to the wind and the currents and stuff like that. Well, in business, in 3-month increments, move your business and say, what can I do, what the most I can do in the next 3 months to get me as close to that 10-year destination I've set? Then after 3 months, you stop for a day, you evaluate what progress have I made that's worked, and you do more of that. What's not working, slow it down or change it. And then what opportunities or challenges come up? Maybe the economy is recovering. How can I exploit that? Maybe, unfortunately, the economy is stagnant. Maybe it's gotten worse. What can I do to navigate that? Maybe my biggest competitor is falling out of business. What can I do to leverage that? Maybe I have a new competitor on the horizon. How can I navigate around them or differentiate even further? Then you push again for another 3 months, 90 days. You stop. You realign your ship to that destination. You start and you stop. You do this every 90 days, constantly readjusting to what the current environment is, and to leverage what's working and to stop doing what's not working. And I promise you, that gets you there every single time. Just do it diligently, it'll get you to that destination every single time.
I like that a lot. I mean, that just it makes it more obtainable. It's, you know, it's precise. It gives you almost a little sampling first to see how well is this going, and then chart your course, you know, based on the results, and then readjust and just keep on moving as long as you keep going towards the ultimate goal that you've already set your mind on and that vision. I love, you know, putting yourself out there 10 years in advance and saying, what does this look like for me? What is my business doing now? Where am I? Where is it? What's going on? And then kind of working backwards from that point. That's great advice. I really like that. You know, there's one other question. I know we're almost completely out of time and our show is almost over here. And I could be, like, talking to you, like, all day long, and I think this is fabulous. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, how can a business increase their revenue by 600%? I'm dying to find out the
answer.
Oh,
yeah, that's something I put in my book, and people are like, that is outrageous. What it boils down to, and where most entrepreneurs miss it, is on the key is communication. And specifically, the example I talk about in the book is in employee communication. And let me give you an analogy. Can you imagine putting together a team, like a soccer team, where three or four of the players don't know where the goal is, and maybe two more players haven't been told any of the rules, and one of the players is adverse, is actually trying to harm you, almost like an infiltrator into the business, into the team. Well, that's how, unfortunately, many businesses are run. The employees know what their job is, kick a ball, but they don't know where they're trying to kick it. They don't know how the business is deeming success. Some of the people become disgruntled and are actually working against the business. So the key to explosive growth, especially when you get your first and second employee on and start growing, is absolute clear definition of what defines progress, the 30-day goals and increments, and making it very simple to digest or to understand if we're making progress or not. And in the book, in the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, the example I give is this guy, David Sherman. He's a friend of mine. He had at the time, it was a small firm. It was, you know, a few hundred thousand. Now it's into the millions. I mean, multimillion our business. And what he did was, when he started the business, he had a few employees, with him initially, and then one or two employees. He said, "Here's your job." And I went in there, and we decided what can give the company clear communication on its progress. So we said, "Well, we need to increase sales. And every time we increase, we get more sales in, we're going to start stacking these gold bullions. They're pretend gold bullions on the desk that everyone walks by when they come in on the reception desk. And when we hit $1 million of sales, that'll be a big milestone. And what we're going to do, if we make this pyramid of fake gold bullions, once we hit the millions, there'll be the capping piece on top of the pyramid. Every single person in the company at that time will get a real gold bullion worth, you know, like $1,000 or something." So people had a very clear indicator of what was pointing out to progress. And they were highly motivated to get there, that when these gold bullions were stacked, they knew that last one will represent real money for them in a fun way, a real gold bullion. So sure enough, they had set this as a year's goal. It was achieved, I think, like 7 months later, because people were so excited about it. It was clear messaging, fun way of delivering it. Everyone knew exactly what counted as a score and what didn't, and everyone got there very quickly.
That's fabulous. I love that idea. It's, you know, working together as a team and all playing on the same page and, you know, working towards the same common goal is just critical. You know, otherwise, you're right. You'd be having, you know, people going into all different directions and, you know, could be doing more damage and more harm than good if you weren't all together, you know, pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, good intentions can take you awry. Even with, you know, virtual assistants and part-time help, if they just know their job but don't know what they're trying to achieve as a greater goal, they might walk you down paths that you have to unwind and fix. It's not their fault. Or problem is yours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I want to briefly touch upon your current company, Obsidian Launch, and how you invest in young entrepreneurs. And you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, so Obsidian, it's kind of changed over time because, like most businesses, it doesn't end up being where it started out. So actually, Obsidian started was a venture firm, an angel fund, and we were investing in companies. We filled up our portfolio very quickly, and today we have our clients and companies that we're invested in working with. But it's shifted. So we found that one specialty we had with these companies, besides just introducing money to them, was we learned how to use behavioral influence techniques in marketing online in particular, in promoting their businesses online. So Obsidian now, we're not investing, unfortunately. So if anyone's listening wants to be investing, we're not doing that currently because our portfolio is full.
Mm-hmm.
But Obsidian has kind of morphed into a new business where we do what's called behavioral web design. And we set up these websites that will dynamically change as people use them to match their behavior. So if, you know, we want you to come on our site and buy a product and use have a propensity toward blue, we're monitoring your use and where your behavior is, we start making the buttons blue because that accommodates something you like, and we change the site dynamically to match with what your interest and your behavior is. That's what Obsidian's done.
Very nice. I like that a lot. Well, Mike, we are, like I said, almost completely out of time here, but I wanted to find out what's the best place for our audience to connect with you again.
Yeah, you know, by all means, come to the toiletpaperentrepreneur.com website. Give it your best stab on Google, and you'll find us right away. There is a boatload of free resources up there. I talk about all the stuff we touched on and a lot more. You simply go to that site. You'll see on the homepage, a star here to sign up there, and you can get all this information for free. There's a pretty good blog up there, too. And then if you want to pick up the book, Amazon.com right now, I think, has the best price on it. You can get a used copy for, like, $11 or something.
Of course, you know, I'm going to want an autographed copy, though.
Yeah, you're getting one. You're getting one. You can get them on Amazon very inexpensively, and I'm telling you, we just scratched the surface on what's in there, so I definitely encourage everyone to pick them.
Oh, no, this has been wonderful. Mike, I'm so glad you took time out of your day to be with us and to share, you know, just even a little bit of information. You're just full of knowledge, and, you know, I love the energy and what you represent and how you like to help promote and support all the entrepreneurs in this world. And, you know, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you might want to share with our audience?
Yeah, the biggest, I think, lesson here is take action now. And I mean that emphatically. You know, if you heard a tip, like maybe the advertising tip I just shared, and you're like, oh, my God, that's a good idea. A lot of times I speak with people and they're like, oh, my God, these are great ideas. And then I run into the same person 6 months later or a year later or a week later, and like, oh, I didn't get around to it. And, you know, what a shame. So if anything that was, you know, Darlene, you shared or I shared on this call, I encourage the listeners, man, oh, man, do it right now. Don't waste a second. You can skip sleep for one day or get a little less tonight. Start doing this stuff. Because if you just get started, you'll get momentum. And momentum will result in change, and change will bring about success.
That's wonderful. Again, thank you so much for being here with us and being on the Accomplish Radio Show. And, of course, we're going to be highlighting you in the next issue of Accomplish Magazine. And, you know, again, you're just an incredible individual, and I'm so grateful that you are on our show today.
Thank you so much, Charlene. I appreciate it.
And for our audience, you've been listening to Mike Michalowicz, author of The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And just make sure to visit his website again, which is toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. Thanks again for joining us. If you would like to be a guest on the Accomplish Radio Show, please visit our website at accomplishmagazine.com and submit a radio show request, and we'd be happy to review it and get back to you. Today's broadcast was brought to you by Zango, a complete wellness company that is expanding into global markets. They're looking for leaders that are passionate about the health and well-being of others in their community. To be mentored and coached in this cutting-edge business, contact Tessa Greenspan at 314-210-6100 or visit queenofjuice.com for more information. If you're in business and want to develop new strategies and get more clients, consider joining the St. Louis Business Club. You can learn more at stlouisbusinessclub.com. If you enjoyed today's broadcast, please mark our show as one of your favorites. Simply visit AccomplishRadio.com and click on the follow button. You'll receive reminders of all of our upcoming shows. We want to thank you, our audience, and our special guest for spending time with us today and for sharing Accomplish Magazine and Radio Show with your friends. Again, please visit our website at AccomplishMagazine.com and share your success stories with us. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, publisher of Accomplish Magazine, wishing you a lifetime of accomplishments.